Welcome to The Deep Dive. We're the show that digs into the source material to get you the essential knowledge fast. Today, our focus is on something fundamental for almost anyone getting into investing: equity funds. We know the deal. You want market exposure, you want wealth growth, but who has time to research 50 different stocks? You need a shortcut. So our mission today is to take you from just knowing what an equity fund is to really understanding how to pick the one that fits your financial picture.
Yeah, that's the crucial part. Equity funds are, the standard starting point for good reason. They offer diversification, professional oversight, but the real power, often missed, is that they let you tap into market growth without needing, a finance degree overnight. Understanding their structure, that unlocks real long-term potential.
Okay, let's unpack that then. We'll look at the mechanics, what that institutional scale really means for you. Then we'll lay out a straightforward six-step method for actually choosing a fund. And finally, touch on how to diversify beyond just stocks. Sound good?
Sounds great. Let's dive in.
All right. So the basics. What makes these funds tick? We hear pooled investment vehicle a lot, but for our listeners, it's not just the pooling, right? It's the result of that pooling.
Exactly. Pooling capital isn't just, combining cash with others. It's about achieving institutional scale.
Yeah.
And that scale gives the fund manager access to things an individual just can't get. Sophisticated research, maybe better execution, and definitely lower transaction costs. This is step one.
Got it. Lower costs through scale. And step two involves people, right? The professional management.
Yep. A dedicated manager or team making the buy, hold, sell decisions, ideally based on solid research and a clear strategy.
Okay. And that management presumably leads to step three, diversification. Spreading the risk.
Precisely. Because the fund holds many different company shares, maybe across various sectors. One company having a bad run is less likely to torpedo your whole investment. It's built-in shock absorption, in a way.
Built-in shock absorption. I like that.
And this structure leads us neatly into step four, which is where, honestly, the real decision-making for investors begins. The two main types. You've got your actively managed funds, where the managers are actively trying to pick stocks and time the market to beat a benchmark, like the S&P 500.
Uh-huh.
And then you have passively managed funds, often called index funds. These just aim to track a specific market benchmark. No outperformance attempts, just mirroring the market return minus fees.
That active versus passive distinction, That's huge. And actually, before we move on, the research we looked at had a really stark point on this. Something like over 15 years, maybe 90% of active large cap fund managers fail to beat their passive benchmark index. 90%.
It's a sobering statistic. And it absolutely should frame how you think about choosing between them. It puts the whole concept of paying higher fees for active management under a pretty harsh spotlight.
Right. So, okay, we understand the mechanics now, pooling, management diversification, the active-passive split, but let's zoom out. For the investor listening, what's the bottom line? Why are these seen as such a cornerstone?
I think it boils down to maybe two main things beyond just diversification. Really strong risk mitigation, as we discussed, and administrative efficiency. Instead of just listing features, think about the outcome. You gain efficiency because pooling resources cuts down internal costs. More of your money actually goes to work. And accessibility is key, too. You can often start with a relatively small amount of money compared to buying individual stocks, especially lots of them.
And liquidity is usually pretty good, too, right?
Yeah.
The research mentioned being able to sell your shares fairly easily with most major funds.
Generally, yes. For most common equity funds, redemption is straightforward. So you get the growth potential of stocks, but with less hassle and built-in risk management.
Okay, makes sense. But here's the challenge. You log into your brokerage account and bam, thousands of equity funds. If they all offer diversification, how do you sift through them? How do you pick? There's no single best one, so you need a process.
Absolutely. This is where you need to be methodical, not just chase last year's winners. Our research points to a pretty reliable six-step approach. Step one, define your goals. Sounds basic, but it dictates everything else. Are you saving for retirement in 30 years? Or maybe a house deposit in 5? Your timeline drastically changes the kind of risk you can take and the return you need.
Okay, timeline dictates risk, which leads straight to step two. Assess your risk tolerance. But let's be real here. Everyone says they have a high tolerance until the market drops 20%. How do you assess this practically?
Well, the practical way ties back to step one. It's less about your gut feeling and more about what your timeline allows. If you need that money relatively soon, your actual risk capacity is lower. you should probably favor funds holding larger, more stable companies. Less potential upside, maybe, but also less gut-wrenching volatility. If you've got decades, you can afford to ride out the bigger swings potentially found in funds focused on smaller, higher growth, but more volatile companies. Match the fund's likely volatility to your timeline.
Right. Let the timeline be your guide. Makes sense. Okay. Step 3. Examine fund performance. But hold on. Isn't chasing past performance a classic investing mistake? We see warnings about that all the time. What's the right way to look at this?
Yeah, the trap is just looking at the one-year return and picking the highest number. That's dangerous. Smart analysis looks at consistency across different time periods, 3 years, 5 years, 10 years. And crucially, how did the fund perform during market downturns? Did it protect capital better than its peers? Seeing how it behaves in bad times tells you a lot more than how high it flew in a good year. And always, always remember the disclaimer. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. It's about judging consistency, not predicting the future.
Consistency, not just peak numbers. Got it.
Which brings us to step 4. Understand fees and expenses. This is critical, maybe the most critical for long-term success. Management fees, expense ratios, maybe entry or exit loads. These costs directly eat into your returns year after year. As we touched on with active versus passive, lower fees have a huge mathematical advantage over time, especially with passive funds. Compounding works on cost too, just in the wrong direction.
Okay, fees are crucial, and that links directly to step 5, check the management style, revisiting that active versus passive choice.
Exactly. Now, you weigh the higher fees of active management against that sobering statistic about long-term underperformance. Are you betting on finding that rare manager who consistently beats the market after fees? Or do you prefer the predictability and low cost of a passive fund that just aims to deliver the market return? Your goals, your risk tolerance, and your view on fees should guide this.
Makes sense. It's a conscious trade-off.
And finally, step 6, review the fund holdings and strategy. Don't just buy based on a catchy name. You need to look under the hood. What companies does it actually own? Which sectors? Does the fund strategy, maybe growth, value, or dividends, align with what you want? And importantly, do its holdings align with your values, if that's a factor for you? Check that it fits your overall diversification plan, too.
Okay, that 6-step process, goals, risk, performance, consistency, fees, style, holdings, seems like a really solid framework. So following that gives you a strong position in stocks, but the analysis also pushed beyond that, suggesting you shouldn't stop there, looking beyond just paper assets.
Right. That's an important distinction. Paper assets usually refers to things like stocks and bonds, essentially claims on future earnings or repayments. The idea isn't to replace your equity funds, but to complement them strategically.
Right.
To build a more, well, resilient portfolio by adding assets that are backed by something tangible and might behave differently from the stock market.
Okay, so this is about smoothing out the ride, reducing overall portfolio bumps.
That's exactly. If the stock market goes through a rough patch, assets that aren't strongly correlated, meaning they don't always move in lockstep with stocks, can provide some stability. They might hold their value or even go up when stocks are down.
And we're talking about what kind of assets here?
We're talking tangible assets. Mm-hmm. Things like direct investment in real estate, maybe infrastructure projects, certain commodities perhaps, real world things. Mixing these sorts of holdings with your equity funds can potentially lead to better risk-adjusted returns over the long haul. It adds ballast.
Right, ballast. And the research mentioned platforms like Gamma Assets was one example that are making these kinds of real-world investments more accessible. That transparency seems key, too, knowing exactly what physical asset underpins your investment. That's sometimes harder with a huge equity fund holding hundreds of stocks.
Transparency is definitely a benefit there. It can give you a clear picture of what you actually own. So the end game is better risk management. You're diversifying not just across stocks, but across asset types, balancing the growth engine of equities with the potential stability and different return drivers of tangible assets.
Okay, so let's bring it all together. What's the main takeaway here? It seems like equity funds are, yes, a powerful tool for wealth building, but you only really unlock that power by being, well, deliberate about it. Using those 6 steps for selection, understanding the costs, and thinking about how they fit into your whole financial picture, including those other asset types.
That's exactly right. And being deliberate includes ongoing monitoring. The Source FAQ suggested reviewing your investments at least quarterly, not to react to every news headline, resist that urge, but to check in on the long-term trends. Is your allocation still right for your goals? Has your risk tolerance or timeline changed? Make adjustments thoughtfully, not emotionally.
Right.
Stay focused on the long game.
So we've clearly laid out the landscape: active funds trying to beat the market with higher fees, passive funds tracking the market with minimal costs, and we know those lower fees mathematically guarantee a better starting point for long-term returns due to compounding. Which leaves us with a pretty pointed final thought for you, the listener, to mull over. Given how hard it is historically for active managers to consistently outperform over the long run, especially after fees, how do you personally measure the true value of that professional management? Is the guaranteed higher cost of an active fund and really the hope of beating the market worth the guaranteed drag on your returns compared to the simple, low-cost efficiency of just tracking the market itself? Something to think about.